What I would like to do this evening is talk about the Joy family. I was going through my lessons throughout the last near year that I've been here, and I have never at this church had a lesson on the family. And I've had various lessons on the church, which is, of course, one of the most important institutions that God has given, but I've never had one on the family. One of the most important institutions, and probably the first institution that God has in Scripture. And what I would like to do this evening is focus on this question: why and how do we find joy in the family? Y'all know, of course, Jessica is expecting a child due in October. And as we prepare ourselves for the coming of this little one, we don't know if it's a boy or girl yet. We'll find out sometime in a few weeks. But as we plan for and expect the coming of this little one, we, you know, try to do some reading about what to expect during pregnancy, about what physiological aspects to expect with a baby. I mean, guys and babies just don't mesh that well. And lots to learn about what a onesie is and what a binky is. And I mean, just a lot of this stuff that goes way over my head. I just don't get. But also from a spiritual aspect, trying to understand spiritually, how do we prepare ourselves to be godly parents? And it gets overwhelming. As you look at most of the Christian literature related to the family, almost all of it is doom and gloom. I mean, nearly all of it, and I would say nearly every sermon I've ever heard on the family, it talks more about the dangers that the family face and the difficulties that are in our society with the family. And we have had various individuals who have mentioned to us, well, I wouldn't want to have children now the way society is. I just wouldn't want to have children in this wicked age. Well, if you do a little math with Noah, Noah had already received his commission from God to build the ark whenever he had his children. He had already been told by God, yeah, I'm going to wipe off the earth. Noah still had kids. Noah gives us a good example in that cloud of witnesses. No matter how bad the world may be, we're still going to do our best to bring God's children into this world. But one lesson I listened to a few weeks ago, it was so much different from most of what we've read and most of what we listened to, in that the focus of the sermon was looking at the Bible passages that talk about the joy that relates to family. This evening, we are going to talk about a couple of dangers and problems that are faced with the family. But what I would like to do is just go into a few biblical passages to understand both why and how do we gain joy from the family. So let's begin with our first question of why should the family bring us joy? And it's all going to relate to this theme of blessing a family. We're going to go through two psalms together. We're going to go through Psalm 127 and then the subsequent Psalm of 128. So let's read through the whole psalm. Psalm 127, beginning in verse 1. A song of ascents of Solomon. Unless the Lord, I'm going to use Yahweh in this context. And yes, Yahweh builds the house. Those who build it labor in vain. Unless Yahweh watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from Yahweh, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Why does the psalmist find joy in the family? This psalm has two major sections to it. The first two verses expound upon the point that Yahweh builds the house. Yahweh is the one who builds the house. This psalm was either written by Solomon or for Solomon. It's difficult to tell. When you look at the Hebrew word of Solomon, it could either mean it was written by David for Solomon or actually written by Solomon. To me, it makes a whole lot more sense when you look at the context that this is probably by David for his son. And expounding upon the fact of what makes a successful nation about what makes a successful family. Either way, but I think that just gives a good context to what's happening in this psalm. But the first two verses, you'll notice the point is Yahweh must build the house. Verse 1, unless Yahweh builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless Yahweh watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Essentially, what is the point of the first two verses? Unless we build our houses on Yahweh, everything else is vain. Unless Yahweh is the protector, the builder, the one who guides, the one who protects, our labors are ultimately in vain. Everything that our hand finds to do, it needs to be by Yahweh. Now, The psalmist shifts focus in the second part of this psalm by talking about the fact that Yahweh is the one who gives the heritage. So let's notice these two sections. As you read through the psalm, I think it's a bit difficult to see how these two sections connect. But here's, I think, the main point. Verse 1 through 2, Yahweh builds the house. Verse 3 through 5, Yahweh gives the inheritance through children. He gives the heritage through children. And I think what the psalmist is ultimately saying is this. We ourselves don't build our heritage. We ourselves don't build our legacy that will follow us. Yahweh is the one who builds it by giving to us children. And that, I think, is the point that he's trying to expound upon in verse 3 through 5. Let's read again. Children are a heritage from Yahweh. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Here, what are children? Children are a heritage from Yahweh. Who ultimately gives children? It's Yahweh, right? We live in an age where we love to plan our children. How many times have y'all heard someone say, it went against every law of modern science, but this baby's coming 10 years after the last one? Why? Because Yahweh is the one who gives the heritage. Yahweh is the one who gives children. I mean, we live in this illusion of control that we have. No, God's the one in control. I mean, Jessica and I, from the time that we knew we would get married, we had conversations about how many children she wanted, how many I wanted. She wanted like 5 at one point, and I was starting off at 1. And we're meeting in the middle somewhere. And ultimately, as we've come about these conversations, yeah, it's not for us to decide. This is up to Yahweh. If Yahweh blesses us with this one child, praise be to God. If Yahweh decides to bless us with a house full of 19 kids and counting, praise be to God. Yahweh gives the heritage. Verse 4. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. What in the world does that mean? Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Does that mean that children sting a little bit? Well, I don't think that's his point at all. I think his point is, if you look at verse 5, blessed is the man who finds his quiver full of them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Here's the image. Children are like arrows in the quiver that the father can then pull out and he can then shoot at his enemy. Essentially, children are going to be on the side of the father. That's the image here. The point is not that the arrows are going to be shot at the father. That may happen at times. But the image is the arrows are going to be shot at the enemy. How does God protect the legacy and the heritage of David or Solomon? It's through their children, right? Above all else that David did, how is his legacy contained? Through his anointed son Solomon. Likewise, through Solomon. How did his kingdom continue? Through his son Rehoboam. Above all of the military and economic and political gains that they made, ultimately their heritage was lived through their children. And how does that heritage get built up? Well, it gets built up by God giving children. That is why children are a joy. Because God is the one who gives the blessing of building up that heritage. And God is the one who blesses us by giving us that inheritance. Well, let's look at Psalm 128. Psalm 128 is a similar psalm that focuses on the family. But again, the question we're trying to answer is, why should the family bring us joy? Well, the first answer I think we see in 127 is this. Family brings us joy because it is God's way of giving us a heritage. And it's also God's way of giving us a protection, those beside us. Let's look at 128. Blessed is everyone who fears Yahweh, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears Yahweh. Yahweh blesses you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Again, there's a few major sections of this psalm. Looking at the first two verses talking about how the blessing that God gives us is the blessing of labor, the fruit of our labor. There's three major blessings that are going to be discussed in the psalm. The first in the first two verses is Yahweh gives to us the fruit of our labor. Let's pick back up in verse 1. Blessed is everyone who fears Yahweh, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Everyone who fears Yahweh, what is the blessing? You shall eat of the fruit of your hands. That's given by Yahweh. God is the one who blesses us with the fruit of our labor. The second blessing is this, is the blessing of family in verse 3 and 4. Picking back up in verse 3. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears Yahweh. Again, this is the one who fears Yahweh. This is a psalm that is giving a blessing upon the one who fears the Lord. The one who fears the Lord, God will bless this individual with a family. God will bless this individual with the fruit of your labor, but God will also bless this individual with a family. Now, let's go through some of this imagery here. As you look at verse 3, your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean? I don't go around calling Jessica a vine, right? We have many endearing terms. Vine is not one of them. Well, what does this mean? Looking at verse 3, the second part, your children shall be like olive shoots around your table. What does it mean for children to be olives? That, you know, they're full of fat and a little bit sour? Probably not. I don't think that's the imagery that he's going after here. I think the imagery is this. You have this image of God blessing a gardener with this great vine that goes around the house. And from it, there are these olives, these rich olives that come from it. And these olive shoots come and it reminds us of the fruit that comes from the labor, the fruit that comes from taking care of it. Ultimately, what's this a reminder of? The fruit of our labor expressed in children. Verse 4, behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears Yahweh. Again, the blessing comes because you fear the Lord. Picking up in verse 5 and 6, the third blessing is the one of prosperity. Picking up in verse 5, Yahweh will bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. What's the final blessing? That of prosperity. May those who fear the Lord prosper. This is a very hopeful psalm. You remember from our psalm class, there's two general types of psalms, psalms of lament and psalms of praise. Psalm 128 has no lamentation at all in it. This is a joyful, praiseworthy psalm. But again, why is there joy found in this? Well, I want us to ask this question then. Why is family a blessing from God? I want us to make a list from Psalm 127 and 128. Why is family a blessing from God? Well, as we looked in Psalm 127, they provide a heritage. How does God provide for us a heritage? It's not through our work. It is not through what our hands find to do. It's through our children that God blesses us with a heritage. How else? They provide support. What's the image of the arrows in the quiver? The image there is that children are the means by which God blesses and provides support for parents. The other image is this, they provide community. And that, I think, is the image of this great vine with the olives of it, is you have this idea of community that God blesses us with. Well, let's take all of these ideas and put them together. Thematically, and taking a bit big picture idea of this, what is really the blessing of family? Why does family bring us joy? Well, they provide us a heritage. They provide us support. They provide us community. But I think it's ultimately this. Family is the strongest example of God's blessing of fellowship. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. You remember in Genesis chapter 2, Adam and Eve at this point are alone. At this point, Adam's just created. Eve's not created yet. I want us to make note of what Yahweh says here in verse 18. Then the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him. What was the original purpose of family? The original purpose of family was to give fellowship. This biblical idea of fellowship ultimately means one of sharing, one of community, one of kinship, one of being brought together, one of relationships. What is the greatest blessing that God has given us in this life? The greatest blessing that God has given us in this life is one another. It's the ability to connect, the ability to relate, the ability to be in community. And how is God's blessing of fellowship more clearly illustrated than the idea of a family? What does a fellowship do? A fellowship provides for us a heritage. A fellowship provides for us support. A fellowship provides for us the community. And this is ultimately the joy of family. Is family is God's truest and most unadulterated example of fellowship. Because the problem was, it is not good for man to be alone. So I'm going to give him a family. And that family provides for us fellowship, support, community. Well, let's ask this question then. How do we make family a blessing? As we look at our society, and this is where we'll not get doom and gloom. We're not going doom and gloom tonight. But as we look at perhaps even the families either that we're a part of, that we know well, that we look of in our workplace, our coworkers at school, family for most people is not their greatest sense of joy. For far, far, far too many people, family is their greatest sense of pain. God blessed Adam by giving him Eve and by blessing him with children so that he wouldn't have to be alone, so that he could be in fellowship with someone else, so that he could relate to someone else, so that he could be in community with someone else. And yet for far too many, family is nothing but pain and agony. How do we get back to this biblical ideal? How do we get back to this biblical ideal of making family our greatest joy? Making it our greatest blessing? Making it the most purified version of fellowship that God could give us? I want us to look at two verses, one from the Old Testament, one from the New, and make a couple observations about this. Let's begin first of all in Deuteronomy chapter 28. In the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is giving his final speech to Israel. And at this point, he is talking about the future of Israel and what's going to occur. He has just given curses and he's about to give blessings. So I want us to note what the blessings are going to be. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. We're going to look at two verses, verse 1 and verse 11. Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 1 and verse 11. If you faithfully obey the voice of Yahweh your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, Yahweh your God will set you high above the nations of the earth. So let's stop here for a second. What's the condition? The condition is if you faithfully obey the voice of Yahweh your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I bless you today. That's the condition. What was the condition of Psalm 128? Blessed is the one who fears Yahweh. These blessings are going to be extended upon those who meet the condition. Those who fear the God, those who fear God, those who seek him, those who walk according to his ways. Those are the ones who God will bless. And then Yahweh your God will set you high above the nations of the earth. Verse 11. And Yahweh will make you abound in prosperity, in the fruit of your womb, and in the fruit of your livestock, and the fruit of your ground, within the land that Yahweh swore to your fathers to give you. How does family here become a blessing? Well, again, let's note, who is truly blessing us with family? The one blessing us with family is Yahweh. Yahweh is the one who is making Israel abound in prosperity, making them abound in the fruit of the womb. God is the one who is blessing them. Now let's go back to this ideal. What is family? Family is the blessing of fellowship from Yahweh. Family is the blessing of relationship from God. For us to find joy in family, we have to live according to the function and ideal standard of family. And the first idea is this: we have to understand that family is God's blessing. The idea that God gives through Moses is this: the blessing comes from God, therefore you need to follow his ways. How do we make family a blessing? It's not by starting with a better marriage. It is not by starting with a Dr. Dobson book. It is not by starting with any self-help of this world. It is by starting by fearing the Lord. And as Jessica and I have contemplated what we can do to prepare ourselves for this little one to come, there is nothing more important that she and I can do than to increase the closeness of our relationship with God by fearing Him, by walking according to His ways, by obeying Him. Because God has made us the blessing, and He has made us the promise. If you walk according to my ways, I'm going to bless you. And we need to learn to walk according to the ways of God. And when we look at our world, isn't that ultimately the reason why family is such a mess? I mean, isn't family just an absolute mess in our society? And I'm not talking just about the definition of what constitutes a family, even though certainly that's been affected. But just family relationships in general. I would like to make note of a quotation. This is from an article I read a few weeks ago from a sociological journal I follow. And I'd like to read you this idea he presents. The question he's trying to answer is, how do we get back to family? Well, here's his question. Is society really the issue? Of course not. We've watched the family fail. Where have we failed the family? I think it's the latter. We approach marriage, a contract based on mutual consent that can be unceremoniously broken. Children are an optional part of marriage. No-fault divorce is simple as changing health insurance plans. And the sexualized culture debases the meaning, sanctity, and purpose of the spiritual union. Even if we don't agree with this view of the family, it can still alter our perceptions of the action. Much like nuclear radiation, being near the sludge can and will alter us against our will, which makes our job even more important and even more difficult. We must be vigilant in resisting the ethos of the age. There is no question that the concept of marriage, and then likewise the ideal of family, has been utterly assaulted in our culture. Our society in general has no respect for this divine institution. Anything can constitute a marriage. Anyone can get divorced for any reason they want. Anyone can have children at any time that they want. Science even allows us for anyone at any time to have children at any point that they want. Who needs a mother and a father? Who needs a father that leads his home? A mother who guides her home? Who needs children that fear the Lord? We don't need it. Brethren, the only way that we are going to get back to finding blessing and joy in our family is if we first get back to God. We must resist, as the article tells us, the societal ethos of our age. And we must not fall victim to the deceptions of Satan that he has taken against this sacred, sacred institution. We must fear Yahweh. We must fear the Lord. But if family is indeed God's blessing of fellowship, fearing God is only one side of the coin. We need to see how it rotates to the other side of the coin, and that is living up to the ideal of fellowship. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. As you go to Ephesians chapter 5 and Colossians chapter 3 as well, these two chapters discuss as well as any point in the New Testament what an ideal family should look like. And I want us to note as we go through this, the theme of fellowship that is intricate to this theme. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 22. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Because we are members of the body, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. The mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. For the family to find joy in one another, what must the family do? The family must have fellowship. The family must be connected. The family has to be one. Have you ever made observations whenever you're out to eat about families? I'm a people watcher. And there was one night a few months ago that Jessica, I can't remember where we were at now. But there was one family, I think we were at IHOP. There was one family, it was a mother and father, each looked to be about in their upper 30s, two younger children, 5 to 7 years old. All of them were at the table. The two children had tablets out. The two adults had their phones out. They did not say but one word to each other the whole night. And that was whenever the food came. And they had to figure out whose food was who. I wanted to go over to that table, take a hammer to those tablets, take a hammer to those phones, and tell them, spend time together. Why have our families fallen to pieces? It's because the family should not be in pieces. The family should be in fellowship with one another. The family should be in a community with one another. The family should be connected with one another. That same evening, there was another family. They were on the other side of the room. You could tell the dad was a character. And don't you love seeing families that laugh together? It was a young family. But they were laughing together. They were having fun together. The child may have spilt something at one point and they cleaned it up and whatever. But they were laughing together. And in that moment, I recognized why family has failed in our culture. We no longer have fellowship. We live separate lives. We can go to our technology and live our own lives. We can go to our workplaces and live our own dreams. We can go to our friends and find our own aspirations without ever living together. A family has to be connected. My favorite philosopher of the 20th century was Francis Schaeffer, and his wife Edith wrote a wonderful book on the family. And she defined the family as this. The family is an ever-changing mobile of life, a center of the formation of human relationships, a perpetual layer of truth, a museum of memories, all these things and much more. A family is much more than just a mom and dad and a few children. A family is the center of human relationships, the perpetual relayer of truth, the museum of memories, all this and much more. When Jessica was working at an elementary school in Lafayette, she could almost without fail predict the family situation of her children. And all of you teachers know exactly what she means. You can see children who are respectful, who are loving, who are fun, and then you meet the parents, and their parents are the exact same way. And then you have the nightmares, and you meet the parent, or maybe the grandparent, and maybe not even a parent if they're ever able to come, and they are just as obnoxious as their child is. A family is where relationships form, where they begin. This is my favorite one, it's a museum of memories. There is no one who understands you as well as your family should, because you build this museum of memories together. And families do things together. They should do things together where they build this museum together. I mean, my sister and I have, when we were growing up, I mean, she was 2 years younger than me. We never disliked one another. But it was as we became adults that we became much closer. And as I've reflected on this, I've recognized it's because we have a museum of memories that we want to visit all the time. There's things that only she and I remember that my parents are getting too old to remember. I mean, we can remember things that happened 15, 20 years ago and we'll laugh about. And my sister will listen to this sermon and she'll tell me that wasn't very nice. But then we'll laugh and we'll add it to our museum of memories. You know, I can make just a little bit of a whistle noise. Woo! Means nothing to any of you. She will die laughing at. Because we have a memory. There's a different noise. there is a museum of memories that you build together as a family. And that's what families should do. Families should build that together. They should be integrated with one another. One of the most impactful sociological studies of the 20th century tried to go about this question, why has the family failed? And I'm not going to read a long section of this, but there's one aspect I think is very telling. Historically, the family's importance has come from the fact of intimate social cohesion. Well, let me explain what that means. Intimate social cohesion. You're united. You're together. With institutional significance in society, not from its sex or blood relationships. In earlier stages, kinship was inextricably involved in the process of getting a living, providing education, supporting the infirm, caring for the aged, maintaining religious values. That's what the family used to do sociologically. The family is where you would support the sick. It's where you would care for the aged. It's where you would maintain your religion. It's where you would get your education. But now, because of urbanization, what has happened? The family, as someone has put it, is now the accident of the worker rather than its essence. You go back two generations. What was the essence of a workforce? It was a family. Why did families in the countries have 10 plus kids? Oftentimes they needed a workforce. And you worked with your family. You spent that time together. Now, we work in spite of our children. In my doctoral program, it amazed me and it saddened me. None of them had any desire, none, for children. Zero. What mattered to them far more than anything else were their publications and their careers and their academic reputations. How is God going to bless me with my heritage? God is going to bless me with my heritage through my children. And the weight and the gravity of that is immense for me. And it sickens me and it saddens me. How many have no desire for children but get them anyway? It took Jessica and me a few months to get pregnant. And it was only about 4 months. But every month when it was time to determine whether or not we were, it broke our heart every time we got that negative result. And there are godly parents, godly husbands and wives that go years and even their whole lives never able to conceive of children. And then there are selfish ingrates in our society that are able to conceive and kill their own children. It sickens me. The weight on us parents must be to raise our children in the Lord. Truly above the fact of how to change a diaper, about what type of laundry detergent to use, about whether we're going to homeschool or public school, about what vaccines we're going to get, about all of the questions that we keep getting all of the time from countless parents. You know what my chief concern is? Am I going to raise my children together in the Lord? I look forward to our family singings, where they have to listen to my loud tenor voice and they're going to try to sing louder than daddy. Where we're going to gather by the bed and we're going to get down on our little knees and they're going to fold their little hands together and they're going to pray together. Where we're going to bring them in and our little girls in their little Sunday dresses, and Jessica's going to pick out, probably from Nareda, who has the best aspect of how to dress children of anybody I've ever seen. Bring them in their cute little Sunday clothes and sit on the pews together and worship our God. But we're going to do it together. And we're going to build fellowship together. Honestly, the reality of our child is still not real. And honestly, I'm truly not that excited yet. Because it's still not real to me. I've seen a sonogram and I kind of understand, but when I know that little child comes, we're going to build a museum of memories. We're going to build it together. And we will teach our children to fear the Lord. What then should happen? The member should be functional, but the family needs to be together. And that's why so many families never find joy in one another, because they never try to do it together. So, brethren, let's now answer our question. How and why should the family bring us joy? Well, it's this. We find joy in God's blessings by recognizing and fulfilling God's true blessing of fellowship and family. That is how the family should bring us joy. But my warning, when we stop fearing the Lord, when we stop walking in His ways, our families are going to become a disaster. When we stop listening to His will, we stop listening to His word, that is when our family will become not our greatest joy, but our greatest pain. And it's when we start living segmented lives, separate lives, doing our own thing, and never fully, truly recognizing the joy of fellowship, that's when family doesn't bring us joy, but it brings us pain. What do we need to do? We need to enjoy God's blessing of fellowship in our families. Get out your songbooks, please. It is to my chagrin that it has been nearly a year that I've been here and I've yet to preach a sermon on the family. Because it is older than the church. It is older than this local church. It's older than our nation. It's older than our society. It's older than Western culture. It is more ancient and more unique than any other institution that this world contains, because it was created and it was planned by the very hand of our God. But why does God want us to have families? I think in many ways a family is our greatest reminder of the fellowship that we share with our God. It's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to give him a helpmate. What has God told us spiritually? I don't want you to be alone. I want you to be with me for eternity. Through godly marriages and godly parents and godly children, we can be reminded of the fellowship that our God has given to us in this life. And it is just a shadow of the joy that we will share in eternity with our God. In many ways, I think family is the best predictor of what eternity will look like. Because when you have families that are nonstop fighting, nonstop anger, nonstop wickedness, there is nothing more painful or more hurtful in this world because our fellowship is severed. But when you get a family together that wants to live in God's way and laugh together, I think that is probably the best glimpse of heaven that we're ever going to get in this life, because it's fellowship with those that we love. If anyone this evening needs to come to our God and Father to come to His fellowship, come forward while we stand and while we sing.